This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Coming up, state officials released the latest flood damage estimates. Some area lakes are going to be under the no-wake zone probably through the July 4th holiday weekend. The top official in the St. Paul, Minneapolis Archdiocese is now the subject of an investigation himself and a taste of Cuban rhythm in the Twin Cities. I'm John Wanamaker. It's Wednesday, July 2nd. Initial estimates say flooding rains have caused at least $32 million in damage to public infrastructure, such as roads and bridges, across the state. Governor Mark Dayton and other state officials expect that figure to increase in the coming weeks. For some counties, the funding for repairs can't come soon enough, Tom Scheck reports.
State emergency managers say flood damage from last month's storms affected nearly half of Minnesota's 87 counties. As the waters recede, managers are assessing the damage to roads, bridges, and other infrastructure that could qualify for state or federal disaster assistance. Chris Idy, Minnesota's Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, said these types of assessments are becoming almost routine, with a disaster declared in every county over the past 10 years.
We are a pretty doggone flood-prone state.
Idy says their initial estimates show that the state will be eligible for federal funds to rebuild. She expects to file the disaster request next week. Idy said their preliminary assessment shows $32 million in damage to public infrastructure.
So that's with only 21 counties turning in paperwork. So that is not even places like Roseau County, Lake of the Woods County, those that still are in the flood fight.
Idy says in the metro area, Carver County has already reported $9.2 million in damage to roads and a wastewater treatment plant. The state has $3 million in a flood relief account to help match federal disaster aid. But Governor Dayton said there are concerns he may have to call a special legislative session to ensure the fund does not dry up. Dayton said it's too early to say whether he'll call a special session.
It looks as though we will need more than $3 million. The question is that available from any other sources? Is it something available in the short term that could carry us over to the next regular session? We'll just have to see when we total up the damage and see what the state and local shares will be for the various federal matches.
Rock County Administrator Kyle Oldry says he hopes a presidential disaster declaration is issued soon for the storm-damaged areas. He says even if his county qualifies for aid, it will take a while for the federal money to reach the area.
I'm guessing best case we're looking at a month and more realistically probably a couple months before we start seeing money back.
Oldry says the heavy rain caused about $4.4 million in damage to the county. He says that includes damage to a short line railroad and in the city of Laverne.
It's primarily infrastructure. It's roads and washouts, culvert washouts, some bridge abutments. The railroad base has been washed. The city had some damage to parks, baseball fields, those types of infrastructure and public-owned assets are what were reviewed today by FEMA.
Oldry says about two dozen roads in the county are still closed because of storm damage. In Scott County, Emergency Management Director Chris Weldon says residents are also wondering when roads will be fixed. He said only one of four roads into Blakely Township is open for residents to use.
Roads are always going to be a concern, the long-term plan for roads and maybe a timetable for when they may be repaired. It's too early for us to know that yet.
Minnesota Transportation Commissioner Charlie Zelli says MnDOT is already working on some road repair. He said some projects, like Highway 19 near Henderson, could take until Labor Day to be repaired. Others could be done in a week.
Some roads are really under repair right now, and we see waters receding, so we think we're actually in better shape than we were even days ago.
The state estimates only involve damage to public infrastructure. It does not include damage to homes, cropland, and other private businesses. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News, at the Capitol.
Rock County officials in southwest Minnesota met with FEMA officials yesterday for 6 hours concerning storm damage from last month. County Administrator Kyle Oldry says bridges and roads are the main problem areas in his county.
We have four county roads that remain closed because of bridge abutments and culvert washouts. And I'm not even sure on townships. I'm sure there's probably another 15 to 20 township roads that remain closed.
He says the storms caused about $4.4 million in damage to public facilities in the county. The Rock County stop was one of the first for FEMA as they began assessing storm damage in the state. No wake restrictions will still be in effect on some metro area lakes this 4th of July weekend. However, Hennepin County Sheriff Rich Stanek says boaters should still take extra caution. Stanek says recent heavy rains have washed large pieces of debris into some lakes, and he says people should also be careful around the Mississippi River and Minnehaha Creek.
Keep in mind, even people standing on the shoreline, we've had this over at Minnehaha Creek, as well as other places, what's normally stable footing has been giving way because the water's been eroding the banks under it.
Stanek says the sheriff's office will deploy extra deputies to patrol county lakes, and he says if you're driving a boat or car this weekend, don't drink. The Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis has hired a Minneapolis law firm to investigate allegations of misconduct against Archbishop John Nienstedt. Nienstedt confirmed the investigation yesterday after news reports about the inquiry surfaced. In a statement, he called the allegations entirely false, but he asked for the outside review by the firm for the benefit of the Archdiocese, which has been under scrutiny for its handling of clergy sex abuse. Madeline Barron reports.
The investigation began 6 months ago. That's according to whistleblower Jennifer Hasselberger, a former aide of Nienstedt's, who told NPR News she was interviewed by two private attorneys in Minneapolis as part of the inquiry. Hasselberger says the lawyers told her they were looking into the archbishop's interactions with priests. She says the lawyers didn't disclose much, but appeared to be most interested in whether Nienstedt had sexual contact with priests or other adults. She also says the attorneys asked specifically about Nienstedt's interactions with Father Curtis Waymire, a priest who is now in prison, for sexually abusing two children and possessing child pornography. Hasselberger says she told the attorneys about a time when the archbishop had wanted to visit Waymire after his arrest, but was advised against doing so by a lawyer for the archdiocese. In a statement, the archbishop did not describe the allegations, but said they involve events that allegedly took place at least a decade ago, before he became archbishop, and do not involve children or lay Catholics or anything illegal. He said, quote, "It would be unfair to ignore these allegations simply because I know them to be false," end quote. Attorneys at the Green Upsol law firm did not return calls for comment. Nienstedt has struggled in recent months to manage the clergy's sexual abuse scandal. Even some of his own priests have challenged his leadership. Father Mike Tegeter of Minneapolis has called for Nienstedt to resign in the past over the archbishop's campaign against same-sex marriage. He says he hopes the latest allegations aren't true. But he was surprised to learn the investigation had been going on for 6 months without Nienstedt stepping aside.
If there is an investigation under the archbishop's own rules, the person is supposed to be taken out of ministry. So I'm surprised he did not apply that to himself in this case.
Tegeter says he doesn't think the investigation will lead Nienstedt to resign.
Well, it might pressure him to dig more deeply in resisting that. It could, you know, make him more adamant and he's not going to step down.
Former Vatican embassy official Father Thomas Doyle says there's little precedent for this kind of investigation.
That's very unusual that they'd ever allow outsiders get into their personal lives.
Doyle says that in his 44 years as a priest, he's never heard of a bishop authorizing an outside investigation into his own private life. Big questions remain. Nienstedt won't say how much the investigation has cost or how the archdiocese is paying for it. Doyle says the archdiocese hasn't released enough information to understand what's behind the investigation.
There's a couple pieces of the puzzle that aren't there.
The archdiocese did tell some outsiders about the investigation. Both the St. Paul Police Department and the Ramsey County Attorney's Office say they knew of it. A spokesman for Ramsey County Attorney John Choi says a former Hennepin County attorney, now working for the archdiocese, called Choi in March. The attorney told Choi that the archdiocese was investigating Nienstedt for allegations of sexual conduct with an adult. In his statement, Nienstedt said the investigation continues. He says the findings will be sent to the Pope's representative in Washington, D.C. Madeline Barron, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. A report from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension shows the number of murders committed in Minnesota last year is up over the previous year. Brad Williams has the numbers.
According to the annual Uniform Crime Report, 111 murders were committed in Minnesota in 2013. That's an increase of more than 20% over 2012. Another 23 people were killed either by negligent homicide or justifiable homicide. Firearms were used in more than half of the 2013 murders. Other violent crimes, such as rape, robbery, and assault, didn't change much over the previous year. Nonviolent crimes, such as burglary, larceny, and motor vehicle theft, all dropped, while arsons increased 17% over 2012 numbers. According to the report, no Minnesota law enforcement officers were killed in the line of duty in 2013. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News.
St. Paul police say a man is under arrest after he wrecked a van and left his injured children behind as he fled the scene. The children's mother told police she heard screaming and found them seriously hurt. She said she'd gotten out of the van earlier because she felt threatened by the father. Her 14-year-old daughter's neck was broken in the crash. Her 8-year-old son had a broken leg with a severed artery. Police found the father at a relative's home in St. Paul. Immigration attorneys are celebrating a decision by the federal government to keep a regional immigration office at its current location near the Mall of America. Lori Yoon reports.
The U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Offices were poised to move to West Bloomington, 3 miles from the nearest bus stop. The government abandoned its plans after mounting pressure from Minnesota's congressional leadership. The Federal General Services Administration says it will find a new location that provides adequate public transportation. Mining Moore chairs the area chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association and was involved with the effort to change course.
We're ecstatic. I've been part of the Legal Service Task Force, and we've been working on it for quite some time now, and it's just great news that the USCIS isn't going to be moving, at least not at this time.
The government is under a 10-year lease with the building in West Bloomington and says it will find other federal agencies to fill the space. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A federal grand jury in Georgia has indicted an Apple Valley man on charges he was part of a nearly decade-long scam to defraud Northwest and then Delta Airlines. Martin Moylan has more.
Paul Anderson of Apple Valley has been indicted along with a California man. Both face 96 counts of mail fraud and conspiracy to commit mail fraud. Prosecutors allege that from at least 2004 through 2013, Anderson defrauded his employer by approving payment for goods and services that were never delivered. The bills came from a company ostensibly owned by alleged co-conspirator Michael Yetter of Los Angeles. U.S. Attorney Sally Quillian Yates says the longevity and scope of the scheme is, quote, simply astonishing. The indictment says the alleged scheme cost the airlines a total of $22 million. Prosecutors say Anderson joined Northwest Airlines in 1979 and stayed on after the 2008 merger with Delta. Anderson could not be reached for comment. Delta declined to comment. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A top federal commerce official says regional companies have become export leaders. Dan Gunderson reports.
Assistant Secretary of Commerce Aaron Kumar visited with business owners in the Red River Valley to highlight the importance of world markets. Kumar says he is impressed by the global businesses in small rural communities.
The amount of innovation that I saw this morning, the amount of intrepidness in going to new markets, was just very inspiring.
Kumar says he wants to export Minnesota and North Dakota's success to other parts of the U.S.
We are very committed to supporting an initiative to taking the story that we see here between North Dakota and Minnesota, replicating that around the country.
The 2014 Farm Bill included a rural export initiative that will help rural businesses develop and market export opportunities. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
Roundy's Supermarket says it will close its distribution center in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. The grocer attributes the closure to the divestiture of its Rainbow grocery stores in the Twin Cities. Roundy's announced the move in a statement yesterday. A company spokesman would not say how many employees will be affected, whether they will be offered other jobs, or when those jobs will be eliminated. Wisconsin officials have dropped a plan to add bacteria to a northern lake to kill zebra mussels. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports the DNR and the U.S. Geological Survey decided to withdraw their application to use the bacteria known by the trade name Zequinox on Keys Lake in Florence County. That's near Wisconsin's border with the Upper Peninsula with Michigan. The decision came after the State Agriculture Department received about 15 letters opposing the experiment, including letters from county officials who expressed safety concerns. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says it'll look for another suitable lake instead. Officials say Zequinox would kill invasive zebra mussels, but not native mussels. The Sioux Falls Humane Society is asking the public to stop bringing in cats because it already has more than 200 in its shelter. The Humane Society says it has limited space for more felines because of ongoing construction. The shelter says it's been turning away new cats from coming in. Finally, jazz fans have been celebrating the latest Cuban percussionist to make his mark in the United States. Tonight, Pedrito Martinez brings an explosive mix of traditional and modern Cuban music and the sounds of Havana's streets to the Dakota Jazz Club in Minneapolis. David Cazares reports.
conciencia. Recapacita y piensa.
On his band's new recording, Pedrito Martinez offers a bit of homespun wisdom, urging his audience to live conscious lives and avoid arrogance.
Ten paciencia. El triunfo está en la consistencia.
Be patient, he sings. Triumph is in consistency. Martinez, who is 40, could well be offering advice to a much younger self. When he arrived in the United States in his early 20s, he had great skills on the congas and two-headed bataz drum, but thought he knew it all. During a jam session with Latin jazz bandleader Brian Lynch, Martinez realized that he had much to learn, not the least of which was how to read music. After mastering his art, he has become a sought-after percussionist for recording sessions and tours. Martinez says all of that informed the band's creative vision.
I had the opportunity to play, record, and travel with many artists from jazz to pop music to Latin jazz, and I put all those experience together in my record and start playing and incorporating a lot of taste from all those bands into my group.
Martinez has such a reputation that he's joined on the album by jazz greats like trumpeter Wynton Marsalis, guitarist John Scofield, and drummer Steve Gadd. They perform solos along with harmonica player Gary Schreiner. Martinez will be joined at the Dakota by classically trained pianist and vocalist Ariadne Trujillo, a huge talent who is also from Cuba. They will perform a repertoire of complex original music that sounds like love songs to Havana in all its glorious imperfections. Martinez couldn't be more sincere when he sings, "Nobody knows Havana better than I do."
I grew up on the streets, and I came from a very poor neighborhood called Cayo Hueso, right on the middle of Havana, and all the knowledge I got in music, I learned in the street. I never had the opportunity to go to any school of music, but I'm very proud and happy that I learned that way, because actually I learned a lot of stuff that they don't teach you in the schools in Cuba.
On the album, the band adds accessible covers to the mix, including Robert Johnson's Traveling Riverside Blues and the Jackson 5's I'll Be There. Like many of the island's modern bands, the Pedro Martinez group has a big sound. Theirs is fueled by four-part harmonies, Yoruba chants, and percussion from the cajon, bongo, and cowbell.
But we're trying to groove, you know, as much as we can, and trying to keep that rhythm very solid and powerful. So we create a language and a code that we all know, that we all feel comfortable and very, you know, very good about it.
For Pedrito Martinez, the music is all about grooving. David Cáceres, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Campana la Luisa se rompió. Yo mando a mi ganga a componer.
Ay, tiren todo lo que quieran, que con la noche yo me voy a defender.
Patico Florido, dime adiós, donde vive mi ganga, digo yo.
Atención, llegó el rey de la selva.
That's the NPR News update for Wednesday, July 2nd. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.